That's 13-year-old Sibo Tuishimiri playing a simple violin that he made out of a can and a string and singing in his native language called Kinyarwanda. Sibo is from Rwanda, but he's temporarily living in the U.S. because he was recently treated here for Hodgkin's lymphoma, a cancer that probably would have killed him if he'd stayed in Africa. Now, Sibo's outlook is improving thanks to a free bone marrow transplant at Children's Hospital in Boston. He's expected to return to Rwanda later this year. Until then, Sibo is staying with a host family in Concord, Massachusetts, where he's been spending some of his recovery time in the family's vegetable garden.
This one, I think, is carrot.
Yeah, and this is a squash. It's easy. Sometimes they bring a big squash. That is pepper and the onion.
We wanted to find out more about Sibo's case and about cancer rates in Africa, because cancer is becoming an increasing problem there, and much of it is caused by infections that could have been prevented by vaccines, but those vaccines often aren't available in Africa. Dr. Sarah Stulak is Sibo's doctor. She spent 6 years working in Rwanda for the Boston-based nonprofit Partners in Health. That's the organization that paid for Sibo's trip here and arranged for his free medical care in Boston. Sarah, welcome.
Thank you.
Sarah, Sibo comes from a family of subsistence farmers in Rwanda. How does a boy like that end up in Boston getting some of the best medical care in the world?
Sibo is from a very poor family in a small village in Rwanda, and he arrived at one of our district hospitals about 3 years ago now with weight loss and fevers and was really sick. And I was able to work with our colleagues back here in Boston to get his diagnosis, which was Hodgkin lymphoma. And we treated him there for a couple of years. He ultimately relapsed, and we realized with the help of the pediatric oncologist at Dana-Farber that his one chance for survival would be a bone marrow transplant. And so because PIH has such close links with Harvard and with Dana-Farber and the Harvard-associated hospitals, we were able to ask our friends there if they would be willing to help him get the bone marrow transplant, which would not have been available in Rwanda or in any neighboring country.
Would you put Sibo's cancer in larger context for us? Because one of the striking statistics we came across in preparing to talk to you was that 70% of all new cancer cases are expected to be in developing countries by about 2020. It's already close to that.
Well, there's a lot of factors going into that statistic. One is just that we're doing better at early detection and at prevention in America, and we're not doing that, and partly because we don't know really what the situation is in research poor settings. In Africa also, we're finally starting to do a little better with infectious diseases. And so as people stay alive longer and don't die from HIV and don't die from malaria and other infections as much as they used to, people are staying alive long enough to get cancer and to get heart disease. And it's sort of what happened in America.
Just like here, yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
And so I think the main thing I feel like I always want to get people to know about cancer in Africa is that there's a lot of it. It's not being treated, and it can be treated with relatively few resources. I guess I worry a little bit about Sibo's case that people think, oh, you know, this is totally unreproducible and he's bazillions spent on him to bring him here. But I mean, the vast majority of cancer patients can be treated with relatively few dollars in Rwanda, in Africa.
But they're not being treated.
And they're
as
not
much
being treated because there's a lot of attitude about, you know, we don't have the resources. It's too, the infrastructure, it's too difficult to treat cancer in Africa. And that is one of several arguments that are used about treating cancer in Africa that are so similar to the arguments that were used 10 and 20 years ago about why we can't treat HIV in Africa and in poor countries. And we really need to learn from our past mistakes and the things that happened then, where people said that we don't have the money, where in fact, you know, prevention and early detection and treatment save so much in terms of cost, in terms of the cost to people and to communities of having late-term illnesses and dying of cancer and other diseases. And then people also say that there's not enough infrastructure and you can't, you know, start a program for treating cancer if you can't have absolute guarantee forever of drug supply and patients being able to keep their appointments and things like that.
Is that a fair point?
I think that we've learned from HIV that it's not a good argument that, you know, it turns out Africans can take their medicines when they need to and that we can get medicines and that really not trying is probably the worst thing we can do, both for those individuals and for the costs to the countries.
Well, you know, you mentioned HIV, for example, which is where a much larger number of dollars goes to treat in Africa people with HIV. Do you feel like there needs to be a reallocation of resources so that more money is spent on cancer rather than, say, HIV?
I wouldn't ever argue that we take money from HIV to cancer, but I think that we have to look at it in a different way. So, for example, I've got several hundred kids that I've been treating for the past 6 years in Rwanda for HIV, and they come to the clinic every month, and they take their medicine, and we put all these resources into making sure we never lose a kid, and they all stay alive. And if we do all that for one of my patients, and then that patient gets Burkitt's lymphoma, which might require 3 months of treatment and be pretty easily cured. Am I going to let that kid die because we don't have a cancer program or dollars for a cancer program? You know, of course not. It has to be. We have to see each patient as this is their life. We're going to do what we need to do to treat them for illnesses as they arise.
In many ways, SIBO was one very lucky kid who was selected by Partners in Health to be brought to Boston and be treated. Do you worry that when you spend so much money and resources on one child, that ends up being less money and resources that could have been spent on other children in Africa? So could you have put more money into what you're doing on the ground there rather than bring someone here?
The allocation of resources is always really hard because we're in a place where there's just never enough and there's always more need and it's really hard. But there's a lot of other benefits from seeing a kid like SIBO survive, even if a lot of money was put into his care. Every time we've treated a kid for cancer, even the ones who didn't end up going to the U.S., I think that on the hospital ward where I work in Rwanda, it's had a huge impact on the attitudes of the nurses and doctors who have previously thought when they see things like a horrible tumor, like, oh, you know, sort of, there's nothing we can do. And I think it's really changed the atmosphere into, okay, let's try. We can do this. We can actually help kids even with really advanced, really terrible diseases. And also, SIBO will go back to Rwanda. He'll be this kid who survived. Who knows what he will do with his life. You know, that's the great thing to me about being a pediatrician is when you treat one kid, you have no idea what the potential is for what they'll do with their lives.
So sometimes singling one person out lifts spirits collectively in a way that makes that expense worthwhile.
Absolutely.
Dr. Sarah Stulak is Director of Pediatrics for Partners in Health. Sarah, thank you very much for talking with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.